Ever pick up like a simple plastic thing and wonder how they even make that? Well, today we're going to deep dive into the world of multi-stage injection molding to answer exactly that.
It really is fascinating stuff, going beyond just pouring plastic into a mold. It's almost like you're conducting an orchestra instead, where each stage carefully controls how that molten plastic fills the mold so the final product is exactly as intended.
That's a great way to put it. Our sources give us a real backstage pass to this whole intricate process, from basic what is it stuff to the actual steps involved, and we even get some insights from real injection molding experts.
One thing that's super interesting is how multi-stage injection molding lets you have this crazy precision and control. It's not just about getting the plastic in there, but really manipulating each step to get that specific outcome.
So you're saying it's not like just dumping cake batter into a fancy mold and crossing your fingers?
Exactly. Like, picture trying to perfectly fill some crazy cake mold with batter. You wouldn't just pour it all at once, right? You'd have to carefully control the flow. Maybe even use different techniques for different parts of the mold so every detail is perfect.
Right, that makes sense. So this multi-stage approach is all about having that same level of control, but with molten plastic instead.
Exactly. And that control is really why this process is so widely used. It all boils down to making sure you've got a consistently high quality product. Each stage of the process has this specific purpose, fine-tuning the speed and pressure, even the position of the plastic in the mold to get the result you want.
Now I'm picturing a team of engineers all huddled around a mold, tweaking dials and levers like a pit crew prepping a race car. And our sources actually break it down into these four main stages with a pretty helpful diagram. They call them initial injection, fast filling, slow filling, and holding pressure.
Haha. The pit crew analogy isn't too far off. So let's break down those four stages. Using something like polyethylene as an example, or PE as it's often called, it's commonly used for things like bottles and containers. Think of it like a basic recipe that you can modify based on your ingredients and what you're making.
Okay, so PE is our base recipe then. What about that first stage initial injection? Is that where the molten plastic first hits the mold?
Yep, that's the first step. It's all about a smooth and controlled start. Like, imagine dipping your toes into a pool you wouldn't just cannonball in, right? In this stage, the speeds are typically kept between 30 to 50 millimeters per second, and the pressure, which we measure in megapascals or MPa, sits around 30 to 60 MPa for PE. This lets the plastic start filling the mold cavity without causing any sudden shocks that could mess things up.
So it's a gentle start to keep everything flowing nicely. Then we hit the fast filling stage. I guess that's where things speed up, like a runner hitting their stride.
That's a great way to put it. The fast filling stage is where we fill up most of that mold cavity. The speed jumps up quite a bit, reaching something like 100 to 200 millimeters per second for PE, and the pressure goes up 2 to 60 to 100 MPAs. The goal here is to fill the mold quickly, but still keep things controlled so you don't get air pockets or imperfections.
So it's about balancing speed and precision. And then comes the slow filling stage. I imagine this is where things calm down again, like that runner nearing the finish line, slowing down to savor the win.
Exactly. The slow filling stage is all about finesse. The speed drops back down to somewhere between 30 to 70 millimeters per second, and the pressure is carefully adjusted to make sure all the details and corners of the mold are filled perfectly. It's like smoothing out the frosting on a cake to make sure it looks perfect.
So we've got a gentle start, a burst of speed, and then a graceful finish. What's the final act in this four-stage show?
Last but not least, we have the holding pressure stage. Think of it like pressing down on a cookie cutter to make sure it cuts cleanly through the dough. The speed in this stage drops to almost zero while the pressure is held steady to pack the plastic tightly into the mold. This ensures that it cools and solidifies evenly, minimizing shrinkage and preventing warping.
This all sounds very precise. Do these specific numbers, like the speeds and pressures, change if you're using a different kind of plastic than PE?
You've hit a key point there. It's important to remember that different plastics will behave differently in the mold. You wouldn't bake a cake and a loaf of bread at the same temperature.
Right, so our PE settings are really just a starting point, a basic recipe we need to adapt.
Exactly. For instance, if you were using polycarbonate or PC, which is much tougher and often used for things like safety glasses and electronics casings, you'd need to adjust those speed and pressure settings.
That makes sense. What makes those settings different for PC compared to PE? Is it about how easily the plastic flows?
You got it. PE flows pretty easily, almost like honey. While PC is thicker, more viscous, so you need more force to push it through the mold.
So, like squeezing honey versus peanut butter through a small opening. The honey flows easily, while the peanut butter needs more muscle.
Perfect analogy. And this highlights why it's so important to understand the specific material you're working with in multi-stage injection molding. There's no one-size-fits-all approach.
This is making me look at plastic products in a whole new way. But let's not get too ahead of ourselves. We've covered the four main stages and how the material itself can change things. What else affects how we set up this whole multi-stage injection molding process?
Well, apart from the type of plastic, the design of the product itself, especially the thickness of the walls, plays a big role in figuring out the best settings.
Okay, so a thicker wall needs different settings than a thinner wall. Is that similar to how the honey and peanut butter float differently?
It's a similar idea. Think about trying to inflate a thin balloon with a fire hose. It'd be a mess. Thin-walled sections in a mold need gentler settings. Too much force could cause the plastic to overfill or even break the mold.
Right, makes sense. So with thicker walls, you could use higher pressure and speed because there's more room for the plastic to move around.
Exactly. It's like having a wider pipe for water. The key is to find that sweet spot between speed and pressure for each part of the mold, making sure the plastic flows smoothly and evenly throughout.
It's amazing how these little adjustments can have such a big impact on the final product.
It really shows the precision and expertise that goes into multi-stage injection molding. But it's not just about setting things once and hoping for the best. It's a process where engineers have to test, observe, and adjust based on how the molded parts turn out. We call this process mold trials.
Mold trials sounds like where the real artistry comes in. Can you tell us more about that?
Definitely. But I think we've covered a lot already. Maybe we should dive deeper into mold trials and how they fine-tune the process in part two.
Sounds like a plan. Join us in part two as we continue exploring the world of multi-stage injection molding and see how those mold trials take us from theory to reality. Welcome back to our deep dive on multi-stage injection molding. Before the break, we were talking about how even tiny changes to speed and pressure can totally change the final product.
Right. It's like learning to play an instrument. You got to hit the right notes at the right time to make it sound good. In multi-stage injection, molding those notes are the exact settings for each stage, and the harmony is a perfect product.
I like that analogy. So let's talk mold trials. This is where the rubber meets the road, right? The engineers really put their knowledge to the test.
You could say that. Think of a chef trying out a new recipe. They've got their ingredients, tools, and a plan. But the magic happens when they actually start cooking and taste as they go. Mold trials are the taste tests of injection molding.
So basically test runs where the engineers fine-tune the settings for each stage, like the speed pressure, all while watching how the plastic behaves in the mold.
Exactly. They're looking for any problems, like if the plastic doesn't fill the mold all the way, or if it comes out warped or with defects. It's very hands-on and often takes many tries to get it perfect.
Okay, so say they're doing a mold trial, and they notice the plastic isn't filling the mold completely. Our sources call that a short shot. What's that look like, and how would they fix it?
A short shot is pretty straightforward. The plastic just doesn't fill up the whole mold, like pouring batter in a cake pan but not having enough to reach the edges. You'd have a cake with a missing piece.
So with our plastic product, we'd have a gap where the plastic didn't reach. What causes that to happen?
Could be a few things. Maybe the injection speed's too slow, so the plastic hardens before it can reach all the parts of the mold. Or maybe the pressure's too low and it's not getting pushed hard enough.
I see. So if they see a short shot, the engineers might try upping the speed or pressure during one of the stages, like the fast filling stage, to get the plastic into those tough spots.
Exactly. They might also check if the plastic's temperature is right. If it's too cold, it might get thick too fast and be hard to flow.
Makes sense. What about warpage that our sources mentioned? That sounds like a big problem.
Warpage is definitely something you want to avoid. It's when the product comes out bent or twisted, like a piece of wood that dried wrong. It happens when the plastic cools and shrinks unevenly.
So it's not just about filling the mold, right? But also how it behaves as it cools and hardens.
Exactly. And a few things can cause warpage. If the cooling isn't even apart, some parts might harden faster than others. Or if the holding pressure in the last stage isn't enough, the plastic might shrink too much as it cools.
So if they see warpage during a trial, what changes would the engineers make?
They might change the cooling time or temperature to make sure everything cools evenly. They could also adjust the holding pressure to make sure the plastic's packed in tightly as it cools, kind of like making sure a cake cools right so it doesn't sink.
Great analogy. I can see how those little changes during cooling and holding can make a big difference in preventing warpage.
It's all about balance. And speaking of balance, we've been talking a lot about the technical stuff, but don't forget, human expertise is huge in mold trials.
Right, the engineers are the ones making those adjustments, using their experience to see what's happening and fine-tune things.
Yep. They use their eyes, intuition, even their sense of touch to check the quality. They're feeling for problems, looking for defects, listening for anything strange with the machine.
So it's a mix of science and art, technology, and human touch.
You could say that. And that's what makes mold trials so important. They connect the settings on paper to how the plastic actually acts in the mold.
It sounds really fascinating, full of challenges and also chances to innovate.
It is, and it doesn't end when the trials are done. There's another key part that makes multi-stage injection molding successful, the feedback loop.
Interesting. So we're going from doing mold trials to learning from them.
Exactly. The feedback loop is all about improving things constantly based on what we learn during those trials and even after the product's being made.
Tell me more. I'm intrigued.
I'd love to, but I think that's a good place to stop for now.
We can get into this feedback loop in the last part of our deep dive. Sounds good. Join us in part 3, where we'll finish exploring multi-stage injection molding and see how that feedback helps make amazing products. All right, we're back and ready to wrap up our deep dive into multi-stage injection molding.
I'm really curious about this whole feedback loop thing you brought up before the break. It sounds like it takes us beyond just tinkering with settings.
Yeah, you got it. It's about constantly gathering info and tweaking things even after those first mold trials. Like, think about learning to ride a bike. You wouldn't just hop on pedal once and call it a day. You're always adjusting your balance, steering, and pedaling, depending on how the bike's reacting. That's the feedback loop in action.
So it's like staying alert and making adjustments as you go. What kind of information are we even talking about?
It can be anything from something obvious, like a bunch of products having defects, to something more subtle, like small changes in size or how the surface looks, that you'd only notice by measuring carefully. Even what customers say matters. Are they happy with how the product works and how long it lasts? So we're gathering data from the factory floor, from quality checks, and even from the people using the products. Then what? What do we do with all this feedback?
That's where the real magic comes in. Smart engineers look at this feedback, searching for patterns and clues that point back to specific steps in the molding process. It's like being a detective. They piece together evidence to figure out what's causing problems.
So it's not just fixing the problem, but understanding why it's happening in the first place.
Yeah.
Can you give us an example?
Sure. Let's say we keep seeing a product come out warped. The engineers would look back at the data from the mold trials, checking those cooling times, holding pressures, even the temperatures of the mold and the melted plastic.
So they're retracing their steps, trying to see if anything changed along the way or if they missed something the first time around.
Exactly. Maybe they find out that a little change in the factory's temperature is messing with how fast the plastic cools, which makes it shrink unevenly and warp. Or maybe they notice a batch of plastic is a little different and needs a tweak to the speed or pressure.
So this feedback loop helps them catch those little things that could slip through the cracks. What happens once they've figured out what might be causing the problem?
They make changes, of course. Maybe they adjust the cooling system, tweak the settings for a certain stage, or even talk to the people making the plastic to make sure it's always the same. It's about always getting better and refining how things are done.
I can see this keeps everyone on their toes working to get better results.
It's a way of thinking, really. Always aiming for the best. It's in every part of the process. And that's why multi-stage injection molding is so powerful and versatile.
It's been really cool to see how this all works, the precision and creativity involved.
You know what's really interesting to me? Even with all this technology, the human element is still essential. It's those engineers with their skills and problem solving that make this feedback loop work and make sure everything runs smoothly.
Absolutely. It shows how powerful it is when human ingenuity and tech work together. We started out wondering how those everyday plastic things are made. Now I see them so differently. Complex, carefully made, and the result of this awesome process that blends accuracy, innovation, and a drive to make things the best they can be.
I'm glad to hear that. Next time you pick up a plastic product, think about the journey it took to get there.
I will. Thanks for joining us as we dove into the world of multi-stage injection molding.